Okay, welcome everybody. My name is Michael Heller. I'm a local here. In the next 30 minutes or so, I'm going to talk about the thing that has kept me excited for the last several months that we decided with my co-authors, that is Jan de Boer from Amsterdam and locals Rob Myers and Yasha Naiman, to be called Entanglement Holography. The paper should appear soon. In a week or so. Let me start with an introduction. ADS-CFT provides the best understood example of the holographic principle in which quantum gravitational theory in D plus one dimensions based on general grounds is expected to be secretly a quantum mechanical theory without gravity in D dimensions. Within ADS-CFT, the emergent direction that very often is denoted Z, so I'll stick to this notation, is related to the energy scale in the dual quantum field theory. And this is apparent once you look at the metric for the anti-de Sitter space. And bulk in the last 15 or almost 20 years by now can be understood in this picture as coming from the Wilsonian RG flow in which Z, this coordinate, plays the role of the basically inverse of the energy scale. So that this emergent direction is a coarse graining scale, but what I want to stress is that direction that is associated with it is actually a space-like direction. So that was coarse graining in say momentum space. But there are also other ways of coarse graining the system. Basically, the example that is the most prominent for this audience is Mera. And Mera, by Giffre, is an example of real space RG flow. It was discussed extensively both on Tuesday in Glenn's talk and also today's talks by Jimmy and Lloyd Bartek. And the only thing that I would like to take home from this picture is that Mera has some sort of Lorentzian causal structure that was already pointed out by Giffre in the original paper. And the coarse graining direction is quotation marks time-like. So this observation has been further developed in the following references. And I think perhaps the first people who took it really seriously and promoted to a new idea, a new principle, was the Stanford group in the recent work that was discussed today. So because it was discussed today, I'm not gonna dwell very much into details, but what I want to say is that within the holographic correspondence in three dimensions, so for ADS-3, CFT-2, using Ryuta Kayanagi prescription for calculating the entanglement entropy for the intervals, you can obtain the time-like metric. You can obtain the metric that is Lorentzian, and in this Lorentzian metric, which turns out to be two-dimensional de Sitter metric, the time-like direction can be associated with a scale. And this scale is basically given by the length of the interval whose entanglement entropy in the vacuum we're computing. So this you already heard. So let me tell you what is the question, what is the motivation, what is the question behind this work that I'm going to present. And the question is whether there is a setup in which simultaneously scale appears as an emergent time-like direction, and you saw on the previous transparency one example of such setup. And secondly, in which local degrees of freedom in this emergent space-time can be identified. And you expect that the answer is affirmative, and this is going to be the subject of the remaining 10 transparencies. This work is based on CFT analysis, so it does not really require holography, and it's holographic in some new way. And the CFT input that we'll need is the form of the modular Hamiltonian. The modular Hamiltonian is related to the entanglement entropy by the first law of entanglement. So in order to remind you what it is, consider small perturbations of some reference density matrix that I will be denoting rho naught. It turns out that for these sufficiently small perturbations, the change in the entanglement entropy is equal to the change in the modulo Hamiltonian. So this is a very general statement that only depends on the smallness of delta rho. But now, of course, the problem, and this was in many talks here, is that we rarely know the form of the modulo Hamiltonian because it's a logarithm of some complicated operator and generically expected to be non-local. However, for conformal field theories in arbitrary number of dimensions, and for spherical entangling surfaces, so I assume that the field theory lives in d dimensions, actually it should be 1d minus 1, we're considering a constant time slice, we're considering a field theory in the CFT in the vacuum state, we have the entangling surface that is a ball, the ball has some radius r, and it turns out that the modulo Hamiltonian is given by an integral over the inside of the ball of the energy density operator with some particular, very particular integral factor. And this is very general. This applies to any CFT and relies only on the symmetry assumptions. So as a result, the change in the entanglement entropy for small perturbations of the vacuum in conformal field theories is related to a smearing of the change in the energy density over the interior of the ball. And this result has been around for at least 4 years by now, but I think we are the first to point out that this expression under the integrand is secretly, at the same time, a bulk to boundary propagator in an auxiliary d-dimensional De Sitter space then. In this auxiliary d-dimensional De Sitter spacetime, r, so the radius of the ball, which measures the scale at which we're looking at the entanglement entropy, appears as an emergent time-like coordinate. Having said this, having noticed this, it implies that the entanglement entropy for small perturbations of the vacuum for spherical entangling surfaces in conformal field theories behaves as a local field in this auxiliary De Sitter space and obeys the Klein-Gödel equation. Whereas the mass of the Klein-Gödel equation, the mass in the Klein-Gödel equation turns out to be fixed, negative, and equal to the minus dimensionality of the field theory.
So, is this De Sitter related to the one that you get by a conformal transformation of the domain?
We have some ideas about it, but I don't want to talk about it now because okay. It's not yet clear.
Okay. Is this related to the fact that a Killing vector satisfies Maxwell's equations?
Well, that I don't know, but I will be happy to discuss it later. Again, let me stress that R, so the time-like direction De Sitter, plays a role of the scale in a dual field theory or in a field theory. So let us get some intuition how it works by considering an explicit example of the small perturbations of the vacuum. R equals 0 corresponds to one of the time-like boundaries in the sitter. And we choose it to identify it with a future boundary. And now, in analogy with the ADS-CFT correspondence, we can perform a near boundary analysis. There will be two possible follows at this time-like infinity. One is divergence and behave like 1 over r. The other one behaves like r to the d, where d is the dimensionality of a conformal field theory. And it turns out that the choice of the bulk to boundary propagator dictates on us that this in principle allowed follow vanishes, whereas the other one is related to the local energy density at a given point with the proportionality factor that comes from evaluating the volume of a d minus two-dimensional sphere. So basically what it tells us is that the entanglement entropy for very tiny spherical regions is directly set by the energy density. And this is something that is very similar to what Ted Jacobson was telling us, I think, yesterday. And then via the wave equation that I showed you, it gets propagated in a causal way towards larger and larger distances. So that's roughly speaking the intuitive picture that we have behind our finding. And let us now consider an explicit example of excitations in two-dimensional conformal field theory. This excitation is given by actually a pure state. This pure state is created by an insertion at some point in time of the identity operator plus the energy momentum plus the energy density multiplied by a small coefficient that I denote by eta. And this energy density is inserted at some Lorentzian time tau naught, and at the same time it's evolved for a while along the Euclidean part of the contour in order to dampen the UV modes, right? It's a local insertion, right? So it disturbs the system very much in the UV, and we want to get rid of this by doing some Euclidean time evolution. Nevertheless, in the end, what we obtain is the profile of the energy density at a given. This behavior. And having this, which is the Lorentzian propagation in auxiliary distance space that is displayed, in order to understand how the entanglement entropy behaves as a function of scale. And you see very clearly in this picture the Lorentzian structure that is this highly peaked energy density leads to two perturbations propagating along the light pole in the emergent two dimensional. This is the geometry. So this is the picture at T naught. You can wait a bit and take another snapshot and look at a new two-dimensional distance geometry. Here, waited for 5 minutes of time. And what you see here is that this energy density profile split into two peaks moving outwards from each other. And this is they're located here and here. They're moving with the speed of light. You might think about them as left movers and right movers. And each of them, by a linearity source, the same structure as here, but with the amplitude of this twice smaller.
Another question. Yeah. So if you wrote the expression for the delta S, there's some covariant expression that's correct for any time slice in terms of this formal Killing vector. Does that kernel also, can that be written as a something related to an auxiliary distributor? Mm. Or is it just the...
Well, we haven't looked at this.
Okay.
But I will talk about covariant formulation in my last slide. So let me add about a few comments about this construction. So our Lorentzian propagation of the auxiliary distance geometry applies in any CFD, in any number of dimensions. It doesn't require large volume of the simple charge, and it doesn't require small coupling. So it's not directly related to the holographic correspondent as we know it. However, one needs to stress that.
Friendly interruption. Can you check if your mic is still on?
I think I think it's run out of battery.
It can't hear you.
Okay, I'll fix that for you right now. Just a second.
Maybe it's a good time to ask questions if there are any other.
Any that you don't want to be recorded.
So you have. It's an auxiliary de Sitter for each different ball, right? I mean,
no.
No.
It's one de Sitter for all the balls, but they lie on a constant time slice. So for each, so this is visible here. This is visible here. The scale over here is the time direction de Sitter. So this corresponds to taking in this context intervals of various lengths.
Yeah.
But this is at
I see
at the initial time. This is
5 minutes of time later, and you see that the picture of the state changes.
Can you go back to the previous one?
Yeah.
So you're, or I guess the other direction, six.
Oh,
six out of 14. But you're, let's see, I guess I'm, so your metric for this de-sitter has an R in it.
An R is
the
speed, yeah.
But
yes, it does.
But you just said that it's the same de-sitter for all the different.
No, it's not the radius, it's not the curvature radius of the sitter. It's the radius, it's the radius of a ball living on
a
constant time slice.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's a coordinate of the sitter.
Yeah, no, I thought that, okay.
So let me clarify
this,
because it's an important
point. Okay.
R appearing here is a time-like coordinate in the sitter geometry.
Yeah.
I'm not, about L, I'm going to talk later on. Yeah?
Okay.
Good. So a few comments. This applies in any conformal field theory. The dimensionality of the de-sitter space is the same as the dimensionality of the field theory. So for CFT2, as Jamie discussed today, we get a de-sitter that is two-dimensional. This is a novel finding, but one has to stress that it surfaced before in the studies of holographic entanglement entropy and the Einstein's equations in these two works, and I guess in subsequent ones as well. However, there it wasn't identified directly with propagation on any de-sitter-like geometry. This equation relies only on the applicability of the first law, but one has to again stress that the first law has to be applicable for spheres of all radii, right? It's not really that we want to be applicable at small r, where it's kind of obvious that it's going to work. We want it to be also applicable at arbitrary large r. As it is now, it conserves constant time slice configurations in d-dimensional CFT, and you saw it on the previous transparency. The equation, I mean, the rules of the game are written in covariant fashion. That means that they apply in any coordinate system in the sitter, d-dimensional sitter geometry, not only in the inflationary patch as I discussed it so far. And last but not least, our analysis, as it is now, does not fix the curvature scale of the d-dimensional sitter. So what I mean is that we have no idea what this number is. The only thing that we know is this product. Okay, very good. So now let me give you a bit of intuition of how we understand this auxiliary de-sitter geometry, how we understand this construction. So the perturbation in the entanglement entropy for spheres of a given radius center at a given point was associated with dynamical field in the sitter at a given x and at a given r, right? Where r is this coordinate. That basically means, and follows from the fact that this is a bulk to boundary propagator, that with a given ball, we associate, we put this ball on a future time-like boundary of the sitter geometry, and the tip of the causal diamonds spanned from this ball is identified with corresponding point in the sitter. So this tells us how a mapping from balls on the constant time slice in the CFT proceeds to a de-sitter geometry. De-sitter geometry is Lorentzian, and we can generalize the argument that appeared earlier in Jimmy's talk that follows from this reference, in which they talk about causal relations between intervals in two-dimensional, on a constant time slice in two-dimensional conformal field theory. Here we talk about causal relations between balls on constant time slice. So if one ball is inside the other, then we might say that the relation between them is time-like. If they touch at one point, then they are null. And if they overlap, or if they just overlap, or one is outside the other, then they are space-like separated. And if you draw the corresponding causal diamonds, the causal cones, you will see that it's sort of obvious that these relations map to the corresponding causal relations between points in the sitter geometry. So this follows basically from the fact that balls are natural generalizations of the intervals for two-dimensional case. Very good. One more statement. So we have a region V. We also have a complementary region V bar. And it turns out that region V bar, if you think about it carefully, maps to another point in the sitter, which actually lies outside the inflationary patch, right? Here we shoot incoming light rays inwards, right? In the direction towards the inside of the ball. You can do the opposite, that is shoot them outwards. And when you shoot them outwards, that basically we interpret this as calculating the perturbation in the entanglement entropy for the complement of the ball. And now, if you want to equal these two, one reason for it is that you're considering, for example, a pure state, then basically that gives, using this formula, this gives for you a very non-trivial relations between the first, between zero, first, and second moment of the energy density on a given time slice. And it's quite interesting that such a formula arises. So I wasn't talking about these about these additional points in the sitter in vain. Actually, if you consider other coordinate frame in which you actually cover the full the sitter geometry, it turns out that this is the picture. So this is the Penrose diagram. Each point on this diagram corresponds to a d minus two dimensional ball. Horizontal lines correspond to d minus one dimensional. Each point corresponds to d minus two dimensional sphere. Horizontal lines corresponds to d minus one dimensional sphere. This is ball. This is its complement. It lives on a future time-like boundary. These are the corresponding light cones in this rather abstract Penrose diagram. We identify this point with the corresponding point to the interior of the ball. We identify this pole with this point with the corresponding region for the exterior of the ball. And then if the entanglement entropy for the interior of the ball is equal to the entanglement entropy for the complement, then it turns out that the dynamical field delta S of V propagates on d-dimensional distorted geometry with elliptic identification, with antipodal identification, which is called elliptic de Sitter. And if this is not the case, then we don't have such an identification. And an example of a state that propagates on elliptic de Sitter geometry is the state that we studied, that is the pure state. An example of a state which propagates on de Sitter geometry without any identifications is, say, a thermal state on a sphere at sufficiently low temperatures.
Can I always just choose to not do the identification? Am I doing something wrong if I don't do the identification?
Well, the
in the first case?
The identification for us occurs through the value of a field at a given point.
But I can have a solution to the equation of motion that happens to have a symmetry.
Oh, I think we interpret this that way because that's our only handle on the underlying geometry. It might well be the case that if you consider if there are some other probes of this geometry, it might well be the case that this identification is not there. It's just the field configuration that has this property. Okay. Do you agree? Okay, very good. So far I discussed for you the construction of one dynamical field in this d-dimensional geometry that was a scalar of a mass minus d. And it turns out that comes from a covariant construction of the modular Hamiltonian for a ball, that if I have more conserved charges, for example, if I have a U1 conserved charge, if I have a U1 conserved current which corresponds to a if I have a U1, if I have a U1 charge, or if I have a higher spin charges, it turns out that for each corresponding conserved charge, for each such quantity, I can define one dynamical field living in auxiliary de Sitter geometry. Such quantities are not completely ad hoc; they appeared earlier in the literature. One in a paper by Berlin et al. From 2013, and that was for the regular, say, electromagnetic current. The other by Hijan and Kraus, and that was the higher spin case in D equals 2. Anyway, if you go back from the a fully covariant picture to the picture that is restricted to the constant time slice, you'll see the appearance of bulk to boundary propagators. And once you see this, it is clear that delta B of spin S is a scalar field in d-dimensional de Sitter, whose mass now is altered and given by this formula. If you set in this case S equals 2, you should be able to recover the mass equals minus d. And it's clear because you get here 1 and here you get d. So let me summarize. If I want you to recall one take-home message from this talk, is that we provided a very general argument that entanglement entropy in weakly excited states in conformal field theories is organized in a novel Lorentzian holographic way. What it means is that if we take the corresponding entanglement entropy, it obeys the wave equation on some auxiliary d-dimensional de Sitter geometry. The statement applies to any conformal field theory in any number of dimensions, and it only relies on the applicability of the first law, which is basically the constraint on the states for which we can use it. The statement concerns constant time slices in conformal field theory. So for each constant time slice, we construct one auxiliary de Sitter geometry. And for theories with additional conserved charges, such as U1 charges or high-end spin charges, we expect one dynamical field in d-dimensional de Sitter spacetime for each charge. So this is an exploratory work, and as many exploratory works, it raises perhaps more questions than it provides answers. One very thought-provoking question is whether we can describe the full content of a given conformal field theory in terms of local fields interacting in some auxiliary d-dimensional de Sitter space. And if this is the case, that would provide a very novel way of thinking about DS CFT relation. One natural question is whether there is some geometric way of thinking about time evolution between two constant time slices, right? Each de Sitter geometry was living on a constant time slice, whether we can think about some way of transiting between these two. Given our today's schedule and two earlier talk on the kinematic space and integral geometry, one natural question is whether the auxiliary de Sitter space that we found actually is the kinematic space. And this is very much related to the question, what fixes the curvature radius of auxiliary de Sitter geometry in our setup? It will be very nice to understand the relation to Mera or C-Mera, whether there is any. And perhaps the last one is the most interesting one. And this is the question, how generic it is. That is, whether it is just the kinematics of conformal field theories that dictates on us this property, or some generic property of any quantum field theory, that is, whether this emergent local Lorentzian propagation in some manifold, not necessarily de Sitter geometry, persists if we break the conformal field theory, say, by relevant deformation. Thank you.
So if you have a holographic CFT, so then you have some gravity equations that would allow you to kind of get another term in that first law. So if you have some one-point functions on the boundary, then you can use the bulk equations to get the metric in terms of the one-point functions. Mm-hmm. And then you can calculate the entanglement entropy in terms of those one-point functions. Mm-hmm. And so that answer could be expanded in terms of one-point functions. So the first term is that first law term. And then there's another term that would be sort of quadratic in one-point functions and so forth. So I wonder if by adding some interaction term to your wave equation, you would be able to reproduce that. So expansion? I mean,
we're thinking about it, but so far we didn't do like any concrete work in this direction. Like, but okay. That's certainly one of the handles on this problem. Consider a holographic field theory and try to understand whether this generalizes to nonlinear statement or how it generalizes if you break the conformal symmetry. Right? You can do these two things reasonably easily using holography.
But even if it's not holographic, you could go to a higher order in the excitation and get some perturbative expansion that might give interaction to the sitter space. I mean,
you wouldn't be able to express the attainment of your future, the boundary length.
No, they wouldn't be one point functions.
Get a weight equation.
I guess one would have to look carefully at the expression that you get from what you're saying and try to decide whether it's local or not. Like here, the crucial assumption was that we know the modular Hamiltonian that was local, and all the rest came from it. That's about it.
Yeah.
So have you thought about thinking of the de Sitter space as the asymptotic boundary and the de Sitter slicing of ABS?
Yes, but we don't have yet anything else to say, I think. And we don't have anything concrete to say as of now, I think.
Mark? So in this case when you had other charges, what's the corresponding entropy that you're calculating the variation?
Oh, you mean what's the physical interpretation? Okay. I'm not sure whether that's crystal clear. These quantities appeared in these two references in slightly two different contexts. Let me start with this one, perhaps. So these guys noticed that when you calculate the Ryudo-Kayanagi entanglement entropy, it's like thinking about the exchange of some massive particle but carrying no higher spin charges. So then they were trying to generalize this picture, so generalize the case when S equals 2 to higher S's. And then they were thinking about exchanges of particles that carry higher spin charges but do not carry energy, which is not really something that you will understand, but it was supposed to be like motivated by holography generalization of the entanglement entropy. Whereas in this paper, this charge QS defined by the integral of the U1 current over the, by the flux of the U1 current over the surface of the ball, appeared as a basically weighting factor that was supposed to measure how entanglement in field theory depends on the charge of the microscopic field.
So that was the Rainey entropy?
Yeah, that was charged Rainey entropy's paper, yeah.
And then you can take the entanglement limit of that?
But I'm not sure whether, I'm not aware of this thing over here for S equal 1 to appear there directly as some sort of an entanglement entropy. Rob, please correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
I just saw it appearing as a weighting factor when you calculate the Rainey entropy itself.
I think the second arrow is more tenuous, but I would have just stopped at this second line and said, well, here I have these objects that I associate with the balls. And they have the same structure. I'm just not calling them delta F, but they show the same.
Maybe from presentational purposes, another letter or another a way of marking them would be better. Yeah.
Okay, let's thank Michal again.